The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Habit 1, be proactive.
We call the first habit proactivity. Be proactive. We'll begin with this habit because I suggest that it is the foundation of all of the habits. In fact, the undergirding support to all of the other 6 habits is proactivity. In a sense, it's a habit of personal vision. It has to do with how you see yourself. It's the paradigm or the map you have of yourself. Let me give a couple of illustrations of what a proactive person is like. In contrast, a proactive person to a reactive person. How many feel better when the weather is great? How many do better when you feel better? It's like most of us. That means that we are reactive to the weather. You with me? The weather is affecting our attitudes and our spirits. And that affects the quality of our work. A proactive person would carry weather with him or her. Proactive people carry their own weather. It makes no difference what the physical environment is like. If they are highly proactive, they're driven by their values. And if their values is to produce good quality work, it's not a function of whether the weather is conducive to it or not. Now, that's what we could call the physical culture. What about the social culture? How we're treated by others. How many feel better when we're treated better? How many have a tendency to become a little, defensive or protective when we're not? Now, essentially, what's that? That's being reactive to the social culture. You with me? That's reactivity. Perhaps the best way to understand the proactive person is to understand the opposite or the reactive person. Both respond. Both respond. The proactive person responds, but on the basis of values that he or she has selected. The reactive person responds on the basis of feelings. The ability to subordinate an impulse to a value is a rare ability. But it is the essence of the proactive person. See, most people are driven by feelings, driven by circumstances, driven by conditions, driven by their environment, and they become reactive to it. Effective people, I suggest, at the very foundation, highly effective people, are not driven by those things. They're driven by their value system that they have carefully thought about and selected and internalized. Let me relate for a moment the story found in a magnificent little volume, which I commend to your reading. It's called Man's Search for Meaning, written by Viktor Frankl, V-I-K-T-O-R, Frankl, F-R-A-N-K-L. It's essentially an autobiographical account of this gentleman's experiences in the death camps of Nazi Germany during World War II, where he was imprisoned because he was a Jew. A psychiatrist from Austria. By the way, if you're ever bogged down feeling victimized in self-pity, or know someone who is, read that book. Or share it as a gift, because it begins to give a sense or a vision of what a person is capable of. The experiences he had in this death camp were unbelievably terrible. In fact, they are almost so repugnant to our sense of decency and virtue, we would hardly want to talk about them. Hideous tortures, indignities of one kind or another. But little by little, Frankl began to realize that he was proactive. He didn't use that word. In fact, you can't find that word in the dictionary. That's why I like it. We can give our own connotation to it. But he called it the last ultimate freedom. the power to choose one's own response in any given set of circumstances. One day when they were torturing him, he began to sense, they cannot hurt me. They can hurt my body. They can hurt my whole temporal circumstance. But I live in that body. They cannot hurt me. They cannot hurt Viktor Frankl, the person. His essential identity was preserved. And he used a series of disciplines, which he outlines in that book, moral, intellectual, emotional disciplines, drawing heavily upon two mind muscles, memory and imagination. And little by little, he exercised this very small, this embryonic freedom which he had inside, until it grew and grew, until he developed more freedom than his Nazi captors. Now notice how I'm using this language. He developed more freedom than his Nazi captors. They had more liberty than he. Liberty, let's define, as a condition of the environment. Freedom is a condition of the person. Liberty means that we have many options or alternatives to choose among in our environment. Freedom means we have the internal power to exercise those options. You see, in the last analysis, and I admit this is very hard doctrine, maybe not too hard intellectually, but emotionally to really deeply buy into it. In the last analysis, no one, nothing can hurt us without our consent. It is our willing permission, our consent to what happens to us that hurts us. Far more than what happens to us originally. Now, things can hurt us physically, temporally, badly. We can sorrow over these things. But the real us, the true identity, the character, the foundation of all success in life, character, the foundation of all success with people, character, does not have to be hurt at all. In fact, it is like the crucible of fire. That very experience is the grist mill that develops the character and develops the internal powers, the freedoms, to handle difficult circumstances of the future and to inspire other people to do similarly. As I said, this is not easy. It's hard. It's hard. Particularly if you and I have had years and years of, explaining our misery in the name of circumstance or what someone else has done to us. Not an easy thing. I remember one time talking about this in a large group of people in Sacramento. Many hundreds of people were there, and a woman stood up in the middle of the speech and tried to give a speech. She got pretty exercised, I guess, about the concept, and she became aware of what she was doing, grew embarrassed, sat back down, but she couldn't constrain herself. She just talked to everyone around her, just with a kind of an excitement. I could hardly wait for the break to find out what had happened. I went up to her and I said, "What happened to you?" And she said, "What you're talking about is really something, because I had a real hard time with it. And I'm the full-time nurse to the most miserable, ungrateful man you can imagine. I mean, that's my professional work." And he just never expresses any kind of appreciation. In fact, he hardly even acknowledges my presence. He nags, he harps. He's really hard on me and the other full-time nurses, and we all kind of feel the same way. It's just made life miserable for us. And I know that it's just worn me out and beat me up, and I go home and I know I take it out on my loved ones, and I think they understand pretty well. But for you to have the gall to stand up there and suggest that I chose to be miserable, do you think I could buy into that? I chose it? I couldn't swallow that bitter pill. Too big, too bitter. I kept thinking about it. And I came to a very important insight. If it was true that I chose to be miserable, in other words, I chose my response to a miserable circumstance, it was also true I could choose otherwise. And that's when I stood up. She says, that's when I wanted to just absolutely shout to everybody. I felt completely liberated. I felt as if I were being let out of prison. No longer can that miserable character control my life. It is not what happens to us. It's our response to what happens to us that makes us what we are. We're also made by what happens to us, but not as much as by our response. In fact, eventually, I'm convinced, our response to what happens to us will influence much, not all, but much of what happens to us in the future. It shapes our circumstances little by little, slowly, imperceptibly. But that power to choose our response lies within us. But we have to first have the vision. Are we proactive? Are we fundamentally responsible? Anyone here ever been bitten by a snake? By a poisonous snake? I was with a cousin once that was bitten by a snake. We were walking down a canyon road, and there was a rattler there. And he had an axe. And he was rather foolish in doing this, but he took off after that snake. And he came down with the axe at one time and cut it in two. And he cut off the last about third of the snake, and the first two-thirds bit him right on the hand. Now, a foolish person would perhaps chase that snake, finish it off. You want to get back. You ever been hurt by someone and you want to get back? In other words, he'll get his or she'll get hers. Any of you had that feeling in you? Now, what's hurting the person? The bite, certainly. But what's really going to do the damage? The poison coursing through the system as you chase that snake. Most important thing we can do when something negative or unhappy or miserable happens to us, suck that poison out. Because the value of help and the value of not aggravating, not magnifying the original hurt is a higher value than the value of getting back, getting even. But a lot of people don't do that. They get invested in the injury, the harm that has been done to them. And they even seek other people to validate them. We get together and we talk about what this person, let me hear your experience. You share yours. Then little by little, you can see a polarization or a separation take place inside a family, inside a business operation, where you have groups talking about other groups. How many can identify with this? See, the damage by far is our response to the hurt done to us. Visualize what a reactive and a proactive person are like. Any of you studied psychology in your schooling? What does SR stand for? Stimulus response. See, here's the stimulus, here's the response. Here's what happens to us, here's the response. That person has a program in them and they're just reacting to it, see? That's the reactive person. The first habit, the habit of personal vision, separates the stimulus and the response. It gives us a vision, an awareness of ourself that we can choose. And between this stimulus and the response is our freedom to choose. Our greatest power in life is our power to choose. It's our freedom to choose. Our greatest power. All other powers are energized by that one. All other powers in life, significant powers, powers that enable us to rise above animals, to rise outside mediocrity in the course of least resistance, and the powerful scripting of intergenerational tendencies that sometimes get into us, is this power to choose. It is our greatest single power. To sense that is part of this personal vision, to sense it. Just think about it. Think about any circumstance, any person. Do I have that power? Now, like any muscle, that power has to be developed. It could be dormant. It could be weak, or it could be strong and active and energized and vibrant and powerful, see? That's what's exciting about the proactive muscle. It can be developed, become enormously strong. But there isn't a lot of support, really, in the theories of the world, the paradigms of the world. You know what the paradigms teach, the theories, the maps of the way life is? That we're determined. That we are scripted, that we are programmed. And we are. No one doubts that. We are programmed. The question is, do those programs determine us or do they just influence us? If they influence us, we can choose our response to the influence. There's three fundamental theories widely accepted of determinism. One, genetic determinism. Genetic determinism. This means your grandparents did it to you. You inherited tendencies. It has nothing to do with how you were socialized or raised in this situation, in your childhood. But it was put into the DNA molecules, the chromosomal structure of your genes, see? A lot of people believe that deeply. Now remember, I'm not questioning whether those things influence us. They may give us many of our natural gifts and talents and maybe even our personality dispositions. The question is, do they determine us? Yeah, I just got a short fuse. Just seems to go through the generations. My father did, and his father before him. I don't know. Just something I guess I've inherited. That's the way I am. Another theory widely accepted, we could call psychic determinism. That basically means your parents did it to you. Or in other words, your upbringing. Your childhood experiences, they essentially laid out your personal tendencies and your character structure. The child is father to the man, embodies that philosophy. See, the child, the first 5, 6, 7 years of childhood, lay out your personality and your character structure that's going to last a lifetime. The child is father to the man. It's the idea, see? How many have heard that? Person who believes it, you know, would probably produce the evidence to support the belief. It's called a self-fulfilling prophecy. They did it to me, see? That's my limitation. Now look, I'm arguing for my limitation. It's mine. Look at the evidence I've got. You agree with me. Argue for your limitations, argue for your weaknesses, and they're yours. They're self-fulfilling prophecies. Self-maps, these self-paradigms. Prophecies you make of yourself. Argue for them, they're yours. Third, the environment's doing it to us. Our boss is doing it to us. My spouse, that bratty teenager, is undoing me. It's the lack of cooperation of the other department. Those people don't understand at all what we're dealing with here. Listen to the language. If you ever wrap your emotional life around the weaknesses of another person, you have empowered those weaknesses to control you. Listen to the language, see? The concept of personal vision is that you've got tremendous potential within you. And that potential is undeveloped, but you can develop it. You're a self-aware person. You're free to choose your response. Now, do you want to really develop your potential? This undiscovered world that you yourself don't know about and perhaps no one else does either? Start exercising your freedom. And act on the basis of your values, not on the basis of conditions or feelings. Let decisions, choices, not conditions, drive us. See, if I can say I'm not responsible, I am psychologically safe. I'm not responsible. But to say I'm now responsible, I am able to choose my response, then I have either one of two options. I either handle it responsibly or irresponsibly. See, I could take an assignment. I did it. Didn't work. Didn't work. You know, what do you want me to do now? I'm not responsible. But the proactive person is responsible to get the job done, whatever the job is, see? See, if I tend to say, well, you know, this sounds good, this proactivity idea, but boy, I know some people that are so programmed and so scripted, they're not even aware at all of this capacity. What's happening already to my head about that person? See? I could start absolving them of responsibility in my mind. Do I, being proactive, see themselves as capable of being proactive? That's the first step, is to see them as capable of being responsible for themselves. In fact, one time I said to my son, "Son, I asked you to do this. You said you would, and you didn't. Now, why are you so irresponsible?" He said, "Dad, that's how irresponsible people act." See? If I do that enough, I'm in a self-fulfilling prophecy. I am producing the evidence that supports my label. To look at the evidences of proactivity or reactivity is simply to listen to language. To listen to language. It's like a fingerprint. It's like a barometer. It's a measurement instrument. It's the language of the soul. Now you tell me, is this reactive or proactive language? Ugh, he makes me so mad. See, obviously, he makes me so mad. I've just transferred responsibility. My emotional life is now governed by him. It just bugs me. Oh, it just undoes me. See? Look how that person has empowered that other person to control them.
This is the end of side 3.